there's hundreds of hours in this document. And once I got the document to 500 inclusive designers, which I will say blows my own mind, because when I first started the highlighting, it didn't feel like there was this many. So just from 2019 to current, there has definitely been a shift towards being more inclusive in the fiber arts community, which is just wonderful.
Hello, makers. Welcome to the Making Conversation podcast, where we chat all about making the app and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing for Making. My pronouns are she, her, and my Making app username is Knit Pearl. Now, here at Making, everything that we do is linked back to our core values. And if you haven't seen those, you can go visit themakingapp.com/about, but I will also link them below. Anyways, a lot of the content here on the podcast and also, you know, the content that we build, that we post in other places are linked back to those values. Basically, everything we do, again, is linked to those values. And we really are pride ourselves in building this wonderfully diverse and inclusive space for makers. So when I saw what today's guest was doing, I immediately paid attention. And Autumn has been a wonderful part of the Making App community for a while and is now curating a list of size inclusive designers in the makerspace. And I wanted to chat more about that with you, Autumn. So welcome.
I am Autumn Eden Goodman, and my pronouns are she, her. And I am Autumn Eden - Goodman on the Making App.
Before we jump into what we are talking about today, I want to know, what is your maker history? Where did everything begin?
It was probably even around 5 or so. I remember my mom teaching me like basic embroidery, backstitch kind of stuff. And then at some point along the way, I was drawing, and then I was doing ceramics for 3 years through high school, which I still miss all the time. And I swear I went through the scrapbook thing everybody else went through, and I probably did some cross stitch in there somewhere. And then in 2018, I had to have spinal surgery, and I had 3 months of I'm not allowed to do anything, literally anything. So I sent my husband to Michael's to pick up a skein of Red Heart and some of the aluminum knitting needles to start teaching myself how to knit. And then I also taught myself how to crochet, and I haven't stopped either. And then since then, I've picked back up into embroidery and cross stitch and watercolor. And so awesome. I do a little bit of everything all the time.
Awesome.
Bored is not in my vocabulary.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that is a lot of makers can say that. It's like, we are never bored. We always got something going on. And that's why we all have 1 million whips. No.
Not me.
I know. I'm actually very proud of myself right now. I have one thing on the needles. That's not true. I didn't mean to lie to everybody. I have more than one thing, but one thing I'm completely focusing on. And the other things, I'm not sure if I'm enjoying those projects anymore. And I feel like that's a whole other discussion. But like, I don't know, when you have a whip that you haven't worked on in a long time, I feel like there's a point where you have to kind of make a choice.
Commit or frog it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a couple of those hanging out.
It's like when it's been a couple of years since you've picked it up, it's that I have one cardigan that is that. And it's like, I don't know if I like made notes of like what size I was making. I could probably figure it out, but also my body has changed since then. And I'm like, would it fit even? I just need to frog it and like either start over, use the yarn for something else. Anyways.
Right.
Speaking of bodies changing, I want to talk about your list of size inclusive patterns and designers. And, you know, like, again, making is all about inclusivity. So this is such an important thing for us. And we are actually building things into the Making app for the pattern side of the marketplace that's going to highlight size inclusive designers as well as size inclusive patterns and some other things that are going to kind of help highlight the people who are really taking the time to think about how to be inclusive for everybody. I want to also talk about what the fat tax is and for you to explain that to everybody. And then, of course, we're going to go into a little history of sizing, because to understand where we are, we should always understand how we got there, especially if we're trying to change the world.
Yes. Awesome. One sweater at a time.
One pattern at a time. I know. I feel like size inclusivity is such a broad topic. And of course, like, we're really honing in on the makerspace, right? But yes, there are so many places where size inclusivity needs to be talked about more. And I'm glad that we're having this conversation. So thanks again for being here. Well, you know, the history of sizing. It's I was telling Autumn before we started recording, I was doing this research and I was like, I'm not surprised, but I wish that I would be at some point, that not everything that we have done is just enveloped in all of the isms. So here we go. Are you ready?
Yes. Take us on a journey.
I will. And people, please don't throw your phone. I'm just delivering the news and the history. And yes, it is frustrating, but here we go. So basically, until the 19th century, garments were made individually, right? So most people had someone in their family make clothes for them, or they made their own clothes. So let's say you, Autumn, were in this time period, and you were like, I don't want my mom to make me an outfit, and I don't know how to do it. So this is kind of what it would look like. Number one, if you are very wealthy.
Well, of course.
Of course. So this practice was basically only available to the rich people of that time. Number two, you need to order in advance. Like, this is not a quick turnaround situation. Fast fashion is not even a thing at all. It's the opposite. It's very, very slow fashion. And it's not like we're ordering a dress like 3 days before an event. You have to plan. And then number three, you go to a tailor. You get measured, and then they assemble everything from scratch, aka a lot of work. And that's what it looked like if you were swimming in money. If you were not swimming in money, again, people would measure themselves and hand sew everything. So based on how we do it today, that's kind of like we're winging it, right? Because now we have patterns, and even if you do make all of your clothes, there is more of a guideline. I do know people who wing it, and that's mind-blowing. You all are amazing. And I,
yes,
wild to me, like my brain cannot compute that, but you are amazing. So here come some wars: the Napoleonic War, the Crimean War. There it is. And the American.
You did better than I would have.
Thank you. I don't know how I ever thought I was just going to say that right on the first time. Okay. So the American Civil War was 1861 to 1865. Basically, all of these wars together were like 1803 to 1865. And all of the uniforms needed to be made. Basically, that's where the first sizing systems came in, right? Because they needed to make so many uniforms for different size men, because, of course, women could not go to war then and do a lot of other things. That translates kind of to like ready-made clothing as we know it today. But it started with just calculating chest measurement. And that was it. So that's kind of where it started, was uniforms for war.
So we're already in trouble if you have a bust.
Yeah, exactly. But again, women couldn't go to war. So it was just men that they were worried about for chest sizes. So there is a medium.com article. I will link it below. This is where I got all of this information. It was like the best article to get everything from. And so I took quotes from it. So by the end of the 19th century, the vast majority of urban male populations in Europe and North America were wearing mass-produced, standardized clothing. Ready-to-wear menswear gradually became more industrialized, while women's wear continued to be identified with the domestic sphere and dressmakers' workrooms. And the patriarchy strikes again.
Yes.
I am going to just cover like the U.S. history of all of this, just to save time, because obviously, if I hit how sizing was created in every place in the world, we'd be here for hours. But I think we can all agree that all of it is just very silly, built under all of the isms and the patriarchy. Okay. The American Civil War brought sizing for men into the picture, again, because of all of the uniforms. And then in 1881, we meet an American tailor named Charles Hecklinger. What a name.
It's a great name.
Yes, yes. She basically creates the first generic patterns for a bunch of body types. And still at this time, it was hard for them to bring this all down to what number it is as it is today because of the challenge of bust shape, as you had said earlier, which same, I understand.
Yes. We're going to need bigger darts.
So the quote that I pulled for this is, the proportional differences between waist and bust measurement among different women were not accounted for by the sizing systems of the time. So a made-to-measure suit still required up to 11 body measurements. 11. Now, this is where we're like getting closer and closer to the time that is now. And it is like, how, what blew my mind is that so much of this did not happen that long ago. It's about to get worse, though. I'm just letting you know, please, again, don't throw your phone or your computer. I'm just delivering this information. Okay. So in 1939, the U.S. government funded a group of statisticians to gather weight measurements and 58 size measurements for 15,000 women. So they did take measurements of women of color, but only used the white woman's measurements in the research.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So we are,
that sadly, tracks.
We are not surprised. It tracks, but still the other part of this is they paid people to model or to be a part of this, which led to a certain part of the population being more inclined to participate, which unfortunately included people who were suffering from malnourishment. It just gets worse. Okay. We're going down the slide. We're going down deep. Then in 1958, when literally, like I wrote, what were they doing the whole time? Because they started this in 1939. In 1958, the sizing system was unveiled, and it included numbers from 8 to 42. Okay. So these were, and it said that these were random numbers based off of bust size, also combined with a letter to denote height, and then full or slender based on hip size. I would be full. Anyways, it was not popular, and many people were like, no, we don't like it, so they modified it. So this is a quote from the article. In the 70s and 80s, just as a glimmer of hope for a clear universal sizing system appeared, garment companies began downgrading size labels and adding lower numbers like 2, 0, and later, even double zero.
Yes.
Okay, breathe, Jen. Okay. A waist measurement that would have previously been categorized as a size 12 became an 8. So this is where vanity sizing enters the chat. And vanity sizing was created as a marketing tool so that people would hopefully buy more clothing because of how much society has driven this idea of smaller is more worthy, smaller is better.
Allow me to show you my surprise face. It's the time when everybody was like doing like a lot of drugs and stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, I think the 70s and 80s drugs to like to make you drop weight, which
yes,
not healthy. Gosh. Yeah. And then now like Ozempic has come into the picture, and that just, I feel like is like, I'm like, are we back in the 80s again? What's happening?
Because we never learned anything from Jenny Craig or Slim Fast or Atkins or keto. Gosh. Or Weight Watchers, or should I go on? I can go on.
I will say that like growing up around this time, when what you hear from people who are famous is like, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. And you see all of these Weight Watchers and you know, all of these other commercials that are basically like telling us as humans to shrink ourselves in, and again, many different ways. Society has said this for years and years and years. It's just, it's hard to not internalize that so much that it's like all of this work that I feel like a lot of us are doing is so deep down. And I don't know that I will ever fully be rid of it. Okay. So in 1983, when I was one, I was alive when this happened, which is very wild to me. The United States Department of Commerce completely withdrew the sizing system of the 50s. They were like, okay, no one likes this. We've got vanity sizing. It's great. The quote from the article, in 1995, the American Standards for Testing and Materials, which was created in 1898, published its own non-mandatory sizing standard. Here we can see the beginning of a rapid size deflation. In 1995, the American Standards for Testing and Materials, a SDM. The size standard lists a size 2, but in 2011, they list a standard for size 00. Marilyn Monroe was a size 12 in the 1960s, but today she would be a size 6. If you are a size 6 right now, you would have been a size 12 before. It just, yeah, I can't.
It's a very angry rabbit hole.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, yeah. So size inclusivity. It's clearly a problem that many countries, many types of clothing, many parts of the fashion world, including our own part of it, being makers. And so just to bring it down to like what we're focusing on today and what you've been focusing on, Autumn, we're going to talk about how we can be more inclusive with sizing in the maker field with patterns. And when I say we, I guess I mean more designers. And I do want to say neither of us is a designer. We are people who have purchased patterns. No. And I think we are people who are wanting to stand up for those who are not represented, right? In Absolutely. Within everything. So I'm hoping that we will eventually be able to have more of a open conversation continued on this podcast and like bring you back on and have some designers on so that they can also give some insight and guidance. I want to talk about how designers can be more inclusive, but let's start with why did you start this list of size inclusive designers?
This actually goes back to 2018 when I first started knitting and crocheting. My spinal surgery was actually due to excessive exercise for weight loss.
Oh, wow.
It caused a pretty bad issue in my back that it's never going to go away, but I can walk. So I'll take the win. And obviously a consequence of that is I've gained weight and have continued to gain weight to some degree or another ever since. And because my body was changing and I hadn't taken fresh measurements in a little bit, I went and the very first knitting pattern I purchased, I didn't fit.
Mm.
I wasn't even the top end of the range. Like I wasn't in it at all. And I sent it to a friend of mine to look at, like, am I missing something? Mm-hmm. And they were very nice about it. It's like, yeah, unfortunately, this is as far as it goes. I can grade it up for you. And I was like, that's really nice of you, but I feel weird about that because now I can knit it, but my other friends who see me knitting it can't mm-hmm. because the designer's not doing that. And I started noticing as I was browsing patterns, a trend of what's now being called size washing, where you'll see patterns that say they go up to 4X or 5X, but then when you sit and do the math, they're not even hitting 50 inches after you account for the maximum recommended ease. And currently, the understood inclusive range is considered 30 inches to 60 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got patterns that are hitting like 48, 50 inches, it's not really as inclusive as they say it is.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward a little bit, and then Ravelry had the big rebrand, remodel that caused tons of issues for everybody. So back in 2019, I started sharing patterns on Instagram that designers were sharing that were size inclusive in my stories as a way to just kind of highlight and bring. And then slowly over that time, I kept doing that, but then it became what if I started a list? So I started a list in Excel, but then it was like, well, how can I make that more useful? So then it became a Google Doc that people could start accessing, which has grown just way more than I even anticipated. So you can access that on my website at buyautumn.com, or I've got links in my bios on making and Instagram. But I've got a tab set up for designs by Instagram name, designs by the designer name. So if you know one or not the other, you've got a way to get to it either way.
Nice.
And that includes whether the patterns are knit or crochet, their Ravelry website, and an alternate website, since obviously Ravelry is not available for everybody, the average minimum and maximum bust that designer provides. And then if they have any accessibility options in their patterns, like low vision format, screen reader friendly, pay what works models, etc. I make a note of those. And then I also make a note of if they have additional languages.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that I did not initially include the minimum bust. I had found people discussing it on Reddit.
Yeah.
Not actually tagging me in. I just found they were talking about it. It's like, but what about the smaller people who can't find patterns in their sizes? It's like, okay, so I'm going to include the minimum bust, but that is not the focus of my spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. I'm including it because I'm already there and I'm already doing the math for one size, so it doesn't hurt me to do the math on the other. Mm-hmm. But I am not going to restrict the spreadsheet based on the minimum size, because my goal is to make a list of designs that are fat friendly.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure most smaller makers can probably walk into anywhere and find a sweater or shirt or whatever that will fit them. Odds are really good. I do understand that there is an issue with finding smaller size garments for petite and whatnot, but there's also designers out there with petite in their name. You've kind of got people that already cater to you.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like if you want a smaller list, you can make a smaller list.
Here's the thing. People, we just need to stop talking about other people's bodies, like, and commenting on it. Yeah. I have friends who are just very thin and they get comments all the time, like eat a sandwich, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not okay at all. Right. But I do think that there is a very different experience for fat people. And again, fat is just a descriptive. It is not a negative.
It's a descriptor,
and
we're
taking it
me.
Back. No. Yeah, exactly. We're taking it back. However, how society treats fat people in many different ways is very different. Just don't comment on people's bodies, period, the end. Skinny, fat, it doesn't matter. But society does treat bigger bodies very differently. So, and this is your list. You can do what you want.
Exactly. I'm the one putting the work in on this, and my focus was designs for fat bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I'm going to focus on. I did start including the smaller range just as an information point, but that is not at all my focus.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I have also included a tab for maker resources. So this is for yarn dyers that provide anti-fat tax discounts. This can be fiber arts related jewelers who will make rings or necklaces or whatever in whatever size you need without any additional upcharges. And then there's a tab for designer resources. And this includes people who do tech editing, pattern grading. I've got test knitters and crocheters along with their bust size that can be contacted. Yarn dyers who are willing to provide yarn support for designers. And then the final tab, which is new, is all of the size inclusive patterns that I've shared on Instagram by the designer's name, pattern name. And that includes the min and max bust after accounting for ease and what weight yarn is recommended and the recommended ease.
Mm-hmm.
So there's hundreds of hours in this document. And once I got the document to 500 inclusive designers, which I will say blows my own mind, because I first started the highlighting, it didn't feel like there was this many. So just from 2019 to current, there has definitely been a shift towards being more inclusive in the fiber arts community, which is just wonderful. But once I hit that 500 mark, I decided to go ahead and launch the Instagram page for size inclusive patterns, because I figured by that point, even if there weren't a bunch of pattern drops coming out that week, I've got a whole list of people that I can be browsing and sourcing. My goal was to try and share an average of 5 patterns per day. And I have just blown that number out of the water. I'm sharing usually closer to 10 patterns every single day, sometimes more than that. And then once a week, I go through all of the Instagram posts that I did that week and put together a top five list of the most liked patterns for the week. And now I'm starting to partner up with dyers and designers for giveaways. And
yay, I love
it. It makes my heart happy.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It's definitely grown much, much faster than I anticipated. I had launched the page August 14th, the day before my birthday, only because people were already finding it. Which I was not expecting. I was kind of like expecting I'd be able to like start doing some work on it and like on the down low and then announce it on my birthday, and that went out the window. But it's grown quite fast compared to what I was expecting.
Within the Making app, you know, right now our marketplace is still in beta. We are working on opening it up and having the actual realization of why we started doing this was to have this like marketplace of basically you could go and if you are a maker, you could find anything that you want. And if you are somebody who appreciates what makers create, you could go and find whatever you want. And it wouldn't be filled with drop shipping and all of this other stuff. So we're getting to that space. Right now, our marketplace is patterns only, PDF patterns. So if you are a designer and you are looking for a super inclusive marketplace social app that is filled with a wonderfully diverse group of makers who are multi-craftual, we would love for you to join us. We kind of see this thing as, you know, we're in the very baby stages. We are a baby startup and we are working to grow the community. Go to themakingapp.com, sign up. And we're also going to be working with Autumn to see how we can support within the app. Once we build all of the things that we need, I'm hoping that we can like have a really good space for this conversation to keep going and for people to come and search and be able to find what they need from patterns to supplies to everything in between. So with that being said, let's talk about something. I know, I'm like, it's happening, but let's talk about something that we found inspiring in the Making app this week. I feel like we've had a really good, like, last couple of weeks. Every day I open it up and I scroll and there's just like, I'm like, like, there's just so many cool things. I do want to say that Tina, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, tina.say.knits, finished one of her designs that she was talking about when she was on the podcast that she was working on and posted a photo of it. And I'm so excited for her. It's called the Bittersweet Raglan. And it's just a very cool pattern. And I assume that Tina is on your list of designers.
Yes.
That are size inclusive, yes. Because that is the type of person that she is.
Yes, she absolutely is.
And the other person that I wanted to give a little shout out to, they are new to the app, but oh my gosh, their studio, they posted a photo of their studio. So it's Marie and their handle is Fair Isle with Marie. And their studio is dreamy, like rolling hills outside the window. I'm like, is this even real? How can I come visit you, Marie, can we be friends? Can I come visit you wherever you are? It's just gorgeous.
I saw the sheep camp sweater that Dye Mad finished.
Oh, yeah.
Which came out really pretty. I'm pretty sure that's on the inclusive list.
Nice.
Oh, and don't even get me started on Frosted Stitches Spices yarn collection.
Oh,
the Frosted Stitch. I want literally every single color. And that never happens. Usually there's like a few colors I can do without.
But yeah.
Nope. This one I want every single color.
Okay.
It is ridiculously so good.
Yes. That there are no bad colors there. Oh my goodness. Anyways, so much good stuff to see in the Making app. And again, like I said, things are happening behind the scenes. I know that like we've been a little bit on hold for a little while with certain features that we've been talking about. Things are happening. Things are moving. Now is the time to sign up and join the community.
But you know what? Woo! I am okay with waiting for things to be delivered and have it right.
Yes. Which we needed to find the right people to do them too. We need to have specific people that understand why we're building this, all of our values, and they need to be passionate about it too. So we needed to find those people and we did. And now things are moving and it's so exciting. So let's talk about how, again, we're not designers, but you have done so much research. You've had a lot of conversations with designers and helped them understand what they should be, how they should be thinking moving forward to become more size inclusive with their designs. So
yes,
what are the steps that designers can take to ensure that they are size inclusive?
The first thing is to look at your size range. If you're not hitting at least 60 inches after accounting for ease, it's just not going to be inclusive. And when I talk about the maximum amount of ease, there's a lot of designers who recommend a range of, you know, 2 to 4 inches or 6 to 8 or 10 to 12.
For really quickly, just in case anyone is listening and they're not, and they're like a, I don't know, a woodworker or a glass artist, because we are a multi-craftual podcast, can you explain what ease is really quick?
Ease is how much larger or smaller than your actual bust.
Mm-hmm.
So most tank tops have knitted negative ease,
mm-hmm.
or bralettes have negative ease. They're meant to be really fitted, mm-hmm. while that oversized cozy sweater is going to have positive ease.
Mm-hmm.
So that ease is talking about how many inches greater than your actual bust size it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay.
So
thank you.
One of the things that I do on the Instagram page for the size inclusive patterns is, as I share patterns, I put them into highlights based on their maximum bust size. And I always tell people to don't be afraid to look up and down from their own size. So if you're a 70-inch bust, don't be afraid to look at like 68 or 66, because there is crazy amounts of ease on some of these patterns. So you can mm-hmm. get away from. And for the negative ease, so for positive ease, I'm subtracting it from the finished bust. And then for negative ease, I'm adding.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, to decide how tight people want it to. Mm-hmm. So I look at that. I think one of the most important things designers can do is look at other inclusive designers' patterns and how they're working. And one of the things that they're going to find quickly is very few people are relying on just the Craft Council size chart.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the truly inclusive designers I'm aware of are either working off of tables that they've made for themselves or working off of tables that other designers have already been making. So Isolde is a prolific designer who is inclusive, and my understanding is that she does have tables available for different measurements. I know Indigo Dragonfly Kim, she has also been working on lots and lots of work putting together more charts.
I met Kim at Flock and did an interview with her, and she's just fabulous. Absolutely love Kim, Indigo Dragonfly. Just a wonderful human. So funny. Anyways, I love that there are designers that are creating true things.
Truly inclusive tables.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So there are other resources out there beyond the Craft Council,
mm-hmm.
which is great because their size chart is really limited. So I definitely recommend looking at designers who are already doing the work and looking at like Victoria Marchant. Her patterns are super inclusive and thoughtful about like bust starts and bust shaping. And she has, I think it's something like 30 different combinations of sleeve options that you can do to get the just right size sleeve for your body. And
that's amazing.
So her patterns are really thoughtful. Find fat test knitters. Like, you need to find people on the higher end, and you have to make it work for them. Like, if you're recommending some ludicrously expensive yarn base, consider offering yarn support. Mm-hmm. Or be open to the fact that they're going to knit something with Knit Picks Brava worsted because that's what's in their budget. Like, mm-hmm. we can't be snobby about free labor. And it's not like they're just whipping up a hat real quick in a couple of hours. They're putting weeks, if not months,
mm-hmm.
into knitting these projects. So making sure that they've got a generous window of time to get the work done. Mm-hmm. Like if you think they need 6 weeks, give them 8. Mm-hmm. That way they're not like rushing and stressing. The designers need to be open to critique and feedback. I had one testing situation myself where I was testing a sweater and I cast on the neck and I pulled it off the needles to put it over my head. It's like, there's no way this is going over my head. It's just too small. I notified the designer and they're like, well, try changing your cast on. It's like, the cast on isn't going to affect the number of stitches and how actually wide this is. And it's like, this is a 16-inch neck length, but I have an 18-inch neck. Mm-hmm. And their response was, well, I like a snug neckline. It's like, but I like to breathe. So I dropped out.
Yeah.
Because
that's, I feel like for everybody, especially as we're trying to change things, this is across many different parts of our society, but being open to listen and receive feedback, that doesn't mean that you're doing, like, if you get feedback for something, that doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It means that somebody cares enough about what you're doing to tell you, like, how you could possibly do it to include more people. That is so important.
Which isn't this the whole point of the test?
Yeah.
Like, isn't the goal to get the best finished garment out of this that you can?
Yeah.
And another trend that I'm seeing is, and I'm hearing a lot more is happening, designers are not wanting to allow the testers to make any modifications. It's like, for me, I have to knit my yoke longer. I just have to, or it's not going to cover the girls. It's just not happening. Yes. But I also have a really short torso. So I can't knit the length of my sweater 18 inches unless you're planning to make some fun hip adjustments, because my waist is not that long.
Yeah.
So I've been getting feedback of people who have finished test knits who were unhappy with the results and haven't worn their sweaters. But are they saying that?
Yeah.
I don't think they are. Mm-hmm. So I think designers really need to be conscientious of, are they actually wanting to do better and be inclusive or not? Because if you don't want to be inclusive, just don't include those size ranges and just accept that this is how you want to handle it.
Because if you're a designer that is trying to really be inclusive, then it's not just having those sizes. It's like gathering feedback from the people who knit those sizes or who sew or whatever pattern it is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well,
were the sleeves comfortable? Was the neck too tight? Was is the bust sitting right? Is the front hem sitting properly because you allowed for bust adjustments? So you need to be able to listen to your tester's feedback. And then I think it's so crucial that when the pattern is ready to be released, you need to share all of your testers, not just your straight sizes. I think it's very common to include the smaller end of the sizing and not want to include the larger end. As a maker, I want to be able to see, how does that design sit? How does it fit? What does it look like on a body for somebody who's sitting down? Especially when we've got makers, more and more makers now, size inclusive designers who are designing bathing suits and rompers and jumpsuits and dresses and skirts and skorts. All of this stuff matters. So I can't just see it on your thin knitters. I need to be able to see it on the other knitters as well. So, and that ties back into the allowing enough time to finish, because another trend I've been seeing is, oh, it's okay if you don't have it finished, just make sure you've got the yoke and one sleeve done. But that's not going to give you a true fit for how is that sweater going to fit.
Yeah. I feel
you're
like
not getting
the
full body. You're not getting the full length. And because you've said they don't need to finish and you've not given them enough time, they're not going to be included in the modeled photos either.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of couched as being like, I'm helping you and I'm being supportive. I understand it takes more time, but it's not really being inclusive. It's
disingenuous.
But also, if this is your business, now I understand if people are doing this as like a side business, like it might be a little harder to do this planning correctly based on, you know, time of year, et cetera. But maybe think about that and plan way ahead. Like any designer that is not planning way ahead, they shouldn't be asking people, especially people who are knitting larger sizes, to get something done within a quick time frame. Like that makes zero sense. So I've sorry, you're hearing my dog in the background.
Test knits.
Benny says hi, everyone.
You haven't heard mine more. I've had test knits where for my size, I was going to be given about a month. Can I do it? Sure.
Right. But who can knit a sweater in a month if you've got other things going on, if you have a full-time job, if you've got, you know, friends and family and other responsibilities?
I happen to be lucky that I work for myself and I make my own schedule for my clients. And, you know, I honestly consider a lot of the size inclusive stuff that I'm doing part of my day job at this point because I spend so many hours on it. So I do technically have more time than the average person for that. But I'm an outlier in that regard.
I want to talk about the yarn part of this. Or, I mean, I feel like yarn and fabric, too, is like, I know that a lot of, because all of the patterns are knit patterns that you are talking about, right? Or is there sewing in there as well?
There are actually crochet and sewing patterns in there, too.
Yeah, crochet. I should say fiber art. Sorry. Fiber art, inclusive. Yes. We are being inclusive. Knitting and crochet. Okay. So it
and
has
sewing. And there is Tunisian, although I have not broken it out separately from crochet. It's just one more point of data that...
You'll get there. Yeah, you'll get there.
There is definitely a kind of built-in fat tax for being larger. We even see it with ready-to-wear clothes. You know, you look at t-shirts in the junior size, and then you look at the same style t-shirts in the plus size, and they're like $10 more. There's been a movement with yarn dyers to offer anti-fat tax discounts because no matter what you do, if you're a larger size, you're going to need more yarn. There's just no way around it. And some of these patterns are really expensive. Like if you went with the recommended yarn and all, you know, oh, and you're going to hold it double with Surrey and oh, and this color works, you're going to use this. There's been sweaters that at my size, I'm a 52 inch bust. There have been sweaters that have come out that it would cost me $500 to knit just in yarn. It's a lot. So there's been a movement with dyers to make yarn more accessible. Some have, you know, you enter in a code and if you're buying 5 skeins, you get 10%. If you're buying up to 8 skeins, it's so much more, or an automatically built-in discount for sweater quantities, which they have a sweater quantity library on their website. There are some dyers who will let you mix and match bases. So there's a lot of different variables and it does go on different scale for different dyers. But even the list of the dyers who are doing this has grown significantly. So I love to see it.
Yeah. Those are a part of the spreadsheet as well.
They are on the spreadsheet and I have been sharing them on the Instagram page. So there is a highlight for discounts.
Awesome.
Which includes all of the, not all. I haven't even shared everybody yet because it's just being able to use indie dyed yarn compared to big box brands. It is a different experience. It just, you know, and there's absolutely a place for all of your, you know, nitpicks and.
Yeah, of course. As long as you are happy with the yarn that you're using, use that yarn. Whatever you're using, like that is acrylic. If that's what you like using, use it. Nobody is judging. Yeah, nobody is
a yarn in my stash.
And if you are a yarn snob, you need to check yourself. But like, yeah, there is a time and place, but it's true. Sometimes it's like, I really want to knit with this indie dyed yarn and it can get very expensive. So I love that people are thinking more about that.
I've had quite a few people reach out like, can you stop adding people to your list? Because I'm spending too much money. And like,
I love that. I know.
I can't believe you.
Oh my goodness. But I know. This plus the festivals that making is going to be a part of in the next month or so, I'm just going to be broke. What are other things that Indie Dyers could be doing? Are there other things that they could be doing that would at least help gain awareness?
There are some that have community funds. Mm-hmm. Where as people are shopping, they can choose to donate a skein or donate a certain portion of their purchase to go into the community fund. So if there is a maker in need who's getting ready to do a test knit or whatever, they're in a position to sponsor a sweater quantity for them without it being out of pocket, which I think is just lovely. And I know mm-hmm. there are designers who do that too. They do community funds for their patterns, so they can send out, you know, patterns to people who can't afford them, and that is in lieu of or in addition to their pay what works models too, which is mm-hmm. so nice to see.
That's awesome.
So I do think designers deserve to be paid for their hard work. Mm-hmm. There's hundreds of hours in a lot of these patterns, so expecting to be paid $8 to $12 for their work isn't terrible, but I also understand that that is out of reach for some people, mm-hmm. even if it's just a particular situation. So when I see, you know, there are designers out there who are doing 25, 50, 100%, you know, honor system, pay what works codes, it makes my heart happy. It's just really lovely to see they want you to make their pattern. It's not just a look what I made.
Tell people how they can support you within this. If there are designers that are wanting to be on your list and are not, and also dyers as well, how can people support you? How can people get in contact with you to be added to the list?
So if you're offering discounts on yarn or you have size inclusive patterns and I haven't shared any of your patterns yet, just send me a message at autumn@buyautumn.com. Reach out to me. And even if you're just a maker who has found somebody that I maybe haven't found yet, let me know. And then ways to support my work, you know, honestly, just following what I'm doing, commenting on what I'm doing, sharing out patterns that you find through me is wonderful. I do have Ko-fi set up so you can send me coffees to help support my work. And it's just lovely when I get that a random thank you so much for what you're doing donation that comes through. I've actually got a few monthly subscribers now, which I didn't even know was a thing until they showed up. I was like, oh, I love it.
Awesome.
So I'm not joking when I say this is basically turning into a full-time job. So
yeah,
any support I can get in that regard is very helpful. I had initially set out to average, you know, 5 patterns per day. So over a year, that would be just shy of 1900 patterns. And as of right now, I have shared 590 posts. So that's a mix of patterns and discounts on yarn and whatnot. One of the things that is really important to me, because keeping in mind Ravelry is just not accessible for people, is I do not include any Ravelry screenshots mm-hmm. or any of the information I put in the information formatted myself. Also, I am reposting, so sometimes the copy is a little outdated. Maybe the pattern dropped a year ago. I don't have the time to go through and copy edit everybody's posts. But if a designer is ever like, please, if they want to send it to me, I'm more than happy to update their posts. Also, really proud of the fact that I'm not just sharing the cool kids. There's always that like dozen designers that are always on the hot right now and always are being reshared and boosted. And I have shared designers with less than 300 followers who are grading patterns up to 70 plus inches mm-hmm. as their first design.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. So I really want to be able to lift up the designers who are showing up and doing work right from the get-go. And there are some amazing people.
That is, you know, another thing that another reason why we built the Making app is there are the people who are always talked about and they have it down. I will say the Making app isn't for everyone, and being on the Making app in the marketplace isn't for everyone. And we never, ever set out thinking that we were, but we want to be able to support those people who are doing such a wonderful job and maybe aren't like highlighted constantly. And
right.
Yeah. So I love that you're also doing that. And that's, we're in alignment there.
Well, and it's not that I don't share the cool kids.
Of course. No, I mean, you know, everybody occasionally, shared,
but... you know, I try to be really mindful.
Thank you for doing all that you're doing. And, you know, we'll have everything linked below so that people can easily access it and or access it. Access it. It's Friday, y'all. We're recording this on a Friday. My brain is slowly shutting down. So what are you working on personally? Like, what are your projects?
I am in a pile of samples right now. I'm actually finishing up the ribbing on this Drover sweater for FinCycle. So this is the Drover pattern by True Grit Knits. And it is a sample. So it's their dyed in the wool. And then it's their collaboration with Farmer's Daughter, the spinster's daughter yarn.
Yeah.
So it's really lovely. And then I actually have two more samples yarn already waiting for me. So like literally as soon as I get this done, I've got the next one ready to go. And then I've got a secret sample coming up, which is going to be so much fun. It is going to kill me not being able to share progress on that. I love that I get paid to knit. It's so lovely.
Oh, that's awesome.
I had the Wanderlust sweater by Wanderlust Knitter in progress for myself. I haven't been touching it much just because I'm trying to get these samples finished and out the door. And then when I'm not doing all this, I'm painting.
So but I just finished... Yes.
I Lay saw
Bandana. Yes. I
love that color so much. That's the floral morganite, right?
Yes, it is. So
it is really bad how much I know some of these colors.
Love it. I love that you knew that. It is so lovely.
The volute.
Yes.
The volute.
I like to call it volute and say it with the accent, even though that's probably very wrong.
You know, we embrace it.
Oh, it is like it looks soft and lovely and squishy. And it was just a joy to knit. And it's 50% merino, 50% cashmere. Highly recommend. After Flock, I started the Lucid Tea with my Porter Wool Co. It's beautiful. It's over there, so it's too far. But I've shown it before. And if you go to my page on the Making app, Knit Pearl, I have a project there if you are very, very curious to see what it is. But it's a very beautiful, like light blue yarn, and it's gorge. Well, as we do for every episode, let's end with a moment of gratitude. I mean, last week I said I was grateful for the team at Barcelona Knits because we are going to have a presence in Barcelona at Barcelona Knits, which is absolutely wild to me that that is happening.
Wow.
We're going to be doing, we're going to be doing some vendor interviews. And again, we're still like confirming everything because we have to figure out like how, set up and all of that and working with the venue. But we will be doing this podcast live there. And I'm also super grateful for Rachel and the team that is putting together Sacred Sheep because we're going to be there too. And again, we're like,
I'm so jealous,
nailing down all those details, but just the community is amazing. And I'm also grateful for you for all of this work that you put into this. There's a lot of work that we all have to do to ensure that, you know, our little corner of the world, makers in general, all feel included and loved and cared for.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that this world is going to be better for all of the work that you are doing and all of the work that everybody does every day to learn and grow. So thank you very much. And thank you to everybody who is putting in that work and being more inclusive just in general.
Well, and that was going to be my gratitude. as you can imagine, I've been reaching out to designers very, very regularly, and I'm seeing so many of them committing to being inclusive going forward, willing to go back and regrade their patterns or pull down patterns that aren't inclusive that they don't think they're going to want to regrade. I'm having some really great conversations with designers, and it makes me feel really good. I think real change is happening. Mm-hmm. It's not just checking a box to look inclusive. Like, there are people truly wanting to show up, and it just makes me very, very happy and grateful for everything that's happening right now.
Awesome.
Just feel like I'm kind of doing what I'm supposed to be doing, where I'm meant to be.
Oh my goodness. Isn't it just a wonderful feeling when you're like, okay, the universe wants me to be doing this. I'm on that path. I feel that way with making as well. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Everything that we've talked about today is going to be linked in the show notes. So whether you're watching or listening, you'll be able to access it. And again, thank you so much for joining. I appreciate you and you taking the time and hanging out with me today and chatting about all this. So it's important.
Well, and thank you for having me.
I think that we'll continue this conversation. So
absolutely.
This won't be it. Yes. We're not, this isn't a one and done.
No, not by a long shot, I'm sure.
To join the very first social marketplace app made for makers, crafters, and artists, by makers, crafters, and artists, head to themakingapp.com. Download the app and join the amazing multi-craftual community. You won't regret it. Just so much inspiration and so many wonderful, wonderful humans. Did you know that you can also listen to the Making Conversation podcast in the Making app? Open the app, tap on Discover, and scroll down to podcasts. From there, you'll see all of them listed. We've also started putting these up on YouTube. If you're listening, there's a link down below to the episode on YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, there is a link to listen. So choose your own adventure. If you've made it this far and you're interested in sponsoring Making Conversation or having Making at an event to collect content, amazing maker stories, vendor stories, etc., send us a note at hq@makingco.com. We would so very much appreciate it if you were to share the podcast with your crafting community, whether that's online or offline. You know, having more eyes and ears always feels real good. So thanks for watching and or listening, and we'll see you in the Making app.